Do not fold, bend, staple, or mutilate this card. The slogan of the computer age. The University of Illinois Radio Service presents a series of programs about you and the computer. From banks to hospitals, and from airlines to music, its applications seem endless. These programs will give you a glimpse of these countless applications and what they mean to you. Do Not Fold takes a closer look at your bank statement, your credit rating, your stocks and bonds, insurance, and monthly bills, all handled by today's computers. Across the nation, businesses are adopting computerized systems for their financial records and transactions. They pass their calculations on to you. Your checking account probably is balanced daily by a modern computer. It's likely that your savings account and loans are also tucked under its wing. As more people handle more money more often, computers become a necessity. Checking accounts may show thousands of transactions a month. There are just not enough bank employees to keep track of all this paperwork. A local bank in Urbana, Illinois, the Busey First National Bank, has computer facilities on its premises. Ed Charlo, manager of the data processing department, explains why.
We installed our computer in January of 1966, and the first application that we put on, which most banks normally initiate first of all, are our checking accounts, or what we call demand deposits. We felt that this was our major problem area. This is the main reason why we installed the computer. The reason for this is it's a university-oriented town, and being as we are one of the closer banks to campus, we do have a larger percentage of both student and staff checking accounts than any other bank in Champaign-Urbana. For this reason, we have quite a high volume on checks and have found it necessary to change from the manual system of bookkeeping through our posting machines to a more sophisticated manner, which we decided to use the IBM system computers.
Mr. Charlo outlined the process by which a check is handled at the bank. The incoming check is already inscribed with magnetic code numbers which identify the issuing bank and the specific account number of the customer. As each check is received for clearing at the bank, the dollar and cents amount of the check is also inscribed in magnetic numbers on the check. Then the checks are fed into a special reader which sorts each check by its code numbers. Some checks are sent on to other banks in the area. Some are sent to the Federal Reserve Bank of the district. And still others are Busey Bank's own checks. As each check passes through the reader, the information on the check is recorded on magnetic disks, which resemble stacks of phonograph records. A special arm is extended into these magnetic disks to record, pick out, or change any information about the customer's account. Each day, the total volume of checks must balance and the files on every customer's account must be updated. At regular intervals, Busey Bank then prints out statements from the data on these disks for each customer. Mr. Charlo comments on the advantages of this system.
We've been very pleased with the increased efficiency. We have found that the customers coming up to complain about a check being posted because their name was Joe Smith and a Joe Smith check was posted to their account is non-existent. We've found that automation has really increased our efficiency and we're very pleased with it.
It took a great deal of planning to install this system at Busey Bank, and the most important part of the conversion to computers was education. Ed Charlo outlines this process.
The initial problems that we ran into when we installed our computer were employee education and customer education. The main part the customer has to do is use the right type of check. The computer operates off of the goofy little numbers at the bottom of your check, which I guess the layman would call them. However, we call them magnetically encoded account number or bank number. This is a very important factor in automation and is a key to our accuracy and how accurate we're really going to be. The main problem was making sure that customers were using checks, which we call personalized checks, which had their account number on them. If the customer was not using his personalized checks, we wrote him a letter, sent him 50 free personalized checks to get him started on it. We have found that once the customer is aware of what these little numbers do at the bottom of the check, that they are most willing to cooperate.
Ed Charlo explains why occasional errors may occur despite such a careful system of employee and customer education.
The main problem that I think is the one customer giving another customer his checks, marking out his number. However, this doesn't help because it's in magnetic ink and it's marked over with regular ink, so the computer still reads this check. Now, this check will go through and be posted onto the account number that's on the bottom of the check, even though another signature is on it. Now, some of these signatures are caught. However, if they're close relatives, for example, and their names are close together, it's very hard to catch this error. Also, on deposits, there are several times that personalized deposits are made where they might use another person's deposit slip. There's no place for a signature. A signature isn't needed if you use your personalized deposit slip. So we assume that the deposit is being made by the name of the person on the deposit slip.
In the final analysis, the success of such a computerized system at a bank is determined by the people who run it. Mr. Charlo puts it this way.
We have a saying, which I think has probably been heard throughout campus and actually throughout the United States now that computers are being used quite frequently, and the saying is garbage in, garbage out. And this really is true. If we provide the computer with faulty information, it's going to process this faulty information and it's going to turn out faulty reports.
Processing of individual checks and other bank records by computers is only the beginning. In 1965, the Bank of Delaware in Wilmington inaugurated a pilot program by which a customer is able to make purchases at a retail store and have the price of the purchase automatically recorded at his bank. The shopper's account is immediately debited, or an installment plan is initiated for him. In this online computer system, Bell Telephone's touch-tone card dialing terminals are installed in each store. Experiments such as these suggest a future cashless society. No longer will shoppers carry cash or even checks. The amount of purchases will be recorded by telephone line at their bank. Income will be credited to their accounts in a similar fashion. Monthly statements will provide a complete ledger of all expenses for the family budget.
An intermediate step in this direction may well be the credit card. Formerly, credit cards were honored only at specific stores within a chain or a particular gas station. However, now the Midwest bank card system, for example, makes possible a credit card which may be used in six states at a wide variety of stores. 800 banks are involved in this charge card system and provide individual cards for their bank customers. As a purchase is made, the sales slip is forwarded to one of 15 charge card programs within the Midwest bank card system, and a billing process is initiated. Robert Martindale, president of this system, explains why computers must be used to calculate the individual monthly statements for each customer.
The efforts to start the program, get it going, and have it operate efficiently when over 10 million sales slips are involved in, have been involved in the last year, will indicate to you that this is a very gigantic business and yet one that must be terribly efficient, because not one sales slip can go to the wrong place. Therefore, computers are a key to operating in the charge card business. And I would dare say that without them, we probably could not operate in the charge card business. One of the areas, not only does it give us accurate processing of each of the millions of sales slips involved to the proper destination, it also gives us excellent accounting records accounting as it pertains to how much to bill the cardholder, accounting as it applies to which merchant receives how much money being reimbursed for the amount of sales slips that he brought to us, and he is credited for the proper amount of the funds. Now, computers do all of this efficiently, in a very rapid fashion, of course, and with a high degree of accuracy.
Mr. Martindale also comments on a special problem inherent in the credit card business and the help of computers in this area.
One of the interesting areas where computer capability has been essential to our operation is in rapid fraud identification. Through the computer, we can take rapid corrective action and have a continuing containment of misuse of the card. Now, initially, the computer programming was set for standard credit card accounting, but extensive changes were made in processing patterns to identify unusual activity by cardholders or even merchants. For example, special reports are prepared by our computers on a daily and, in some cases, hourly basis, thus enabling us to move in fast on lost or stolen card situations.
According to Mr. Martindale, progression from the checking account to the credit card is just a part of a long-term development in man's financial dealings.
As it is with banking here, we've moved from the barter system centuries ago to a coin and cash system. We think now that more and more people are using and like the benefits of charge cards, and that this may be a first plateau to another type of payment mechanism, very heavily controlled by or operated through electronic banking.
Even the sounds of the brisk trade on the floor at the Chicago Board of Trade are a part of the age of the computer. Every time a futures contract is traded, two parties commit themselves to a transaction involving commodities such as corn, wheat, or pork bellies. The Chicago Board of Trade acts as a clearinghouse to settle these trades and to assure adequate margins of money available to guarantee those trades. President A.C. Christian explains why the Board of Trade has used computers to complete these operations since 1963.
We began studying the possibility of mechanizing the clearinghouse at least as early as 1955. At that time, the equipment available for this purpose was not just precisely what we thought we might need. Computers were developed in the meantime, which lent themselves very nicely to our type of operation. But because of the nature of a clearing operation, it is one that lends itself very nicely to computerized processing. We have a vast number of individual transactions which are similar. That lends itself very nicely to electronic data processing. We have had some very sad experiences in years gone by in which clerks of our clearing member firms worked unreasonable hours to get the work done. I can remember when a trade of as much as 100 million bushels bought and sold in one day would keep our clearing member clerks here all night. And of course, our clearinghouse clerks, who in those days verified these things by hand, they would be here all night and well into the morning. And it was, sometimes it was a little difficult to have the clearinghouse in balance in time to meet the market. Now, we even then managed somehow to know that we were in balance before the market opened. It was essential that we do so. But it was the type of operation that cried out for mechanization because human fingers just couldn't keep up with the volume we were attempting to handle.
Mr. Christian outlines how the process now works at the Chicago Board of Trade on a typical trading day.
Let's say, for example, that we have two theoretical customers, each of whom places an order for execution of a futures contract through a brokerage house, one wishing to buy and the other wishing to sell. Those orders would be transmitted to the Chicago office of the brokerage house involved, and from there transmitted to the trading floor by telephone. A floor order would then be written and taken into the appropriate pit and handed to the broker filling orders for the particular firm involved. Now let's say that the broker who is in receipt of the order to buy and the broker who receives the order to sell happen to trade with one another. Each of them will endorse his order, showing that he has executed the order and showing the price of execution, and will send it back to the floor telephone. Execution will then be confirmed to the brokerage office. The brokerage office will then confirm execution to the customer. At that point, we have a clearing member involved on each side of this transaction. Clearing member representing the buying customer and a clearing member representing the selling customer. Each of those clearing members will prepare a tabulating card, punched IBM card as it is sometimes called. The buyer will show what he bought and from whom he bought it and the essential terms of the contract. The seller will do likewise. Those two cards will then be submitted to the clearinghouse. Now we load those cards onto our electronic data processing equipment. And the machine takes over from there. First, the machine will edit each of the cards to see that both parties have included all essential information. The machine doesn't know whether the price is right at this point, but it knows that a price is there. If the price has been omitted, the machine will refuse it. But assume that the machine has accepted the two cards, the two records, as being at least complete. Later, after all of the transactions for the day have been put onto the machine and they have been sorted out in a proper order so that they may be compared, the machine will compare the records of purchases with the records of sales to see that they agree. If they do not agree, the machine will print notices in duplicate of the trades that were submitted but do not match. These notices are then furnished the members, the clearing members, who submitted the trades to us. Those clearing members from these unmatched trade notices then will be able to detect wherein they differ. They must then get together with one another and reconcile those differences. They then have an opportunity to resubmit the trade or submit corrected trade records so that the trade can be cleared, because we cannot, of course, clear a trade unless the buyer and seller agree with one another.
Not only men on the trading floor, but those in stock brokerage firms across the country may benefit from computer-prepared information. Up-to-the-minute price quotations are being displayed in Chicago offices via ComQuote, a new system which uses computers to calculate the latest offered prices for futures. Warren W. Liebeck, Executive Vice President and Secretary of the Board of Trade, explains how ComQuote works.
What we have done is take our old manual mechanical system that included posting quotations manually on a chalkboard and put it in the hands of a computer. The computer is really the heart, the guts of the new situation. And basically, the way it works is this. As the quotations are flashed to a reporter in a pit on our trading floor, that reporter has an input unit which he automatically activates the quotation into the computer. The computer then makes certain tests of this quotation. Is it too high, too low? Is there something else wrong with it? This, of course, as you well understand, is done in milliseconds. And then the quotation, let's assume the quotation is correct, the computer sends it out. It really does three things with it at the present time. One, it posts it automatically on a mechanical board on our trading floor, which will replace our chalkboard system. Two, it sends it out automatically over the ticker system. There's no longer a teletype operator activating the ticker system. That's done by the computer. And three, through a system which is much beyond me electronically, it is the computer signal is turned into a television symbol and is posted on television sets throughout, at the present time, only the Chicago Board of Trade building, since the DivCon, which is the arrangement which takes the computer signal and puts it on television, is one, expensive, and two, it has a limited ability to move these over lines. It's limited to about a mile from the DivCon at the present time. And although we have talked to other markets about this, they have not as yet seen fit to put a system in.
Mr. Liebeck explains why such a system became necessary and has proved so successful.
There were really three reasons why we went to an automated system. One, we're using techniques such as old telegraphy, which are dying out, and we can't find telegraphers to run our present system. Secondly, is the fact that the system works faster because computers, mechanical means which deal in work in milliseconds, are handling things that humans used to handle. And third is, we think that as you eliminate the humans, why, you can increase the reliability. I've learned in the time that we've worked with this that a computer can be quite as irascible as a human being, however, and you finally get the bugs out of him, but it takes a long time to shake them out. We think that when we finally get this system thoroughly refined, your information will come much faster, both over the ticker, on our boards, and it will be much more reliable, since if the reporter in the pit, who is really the initial contact between the trade that's made and the outside world, if he gets it correctly and transmits it correctly, then everything else is going to be in good shape.
A similar display of price quotations is also available from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange on television terminals across the country. Within seconds, a stockbroker may tell you the latest position of AT&T or American Airlines. By pressing certain symbols indicating the stock in question, the broker can draw on information from the New York Stock Exchange stored in computers in Chicago. Stocks can also be purchased at rapid speed with the use of computers. Jack Morris of the Champaign, Illinois office of Hayden & Stone compares the old manual system and the new automated system for purchase and sale of stocks.
10 to 12 years ago, we had the old tape down system. We had a teletype machine that had a single line tape. It had paste on the bottom, and it was about 1/2 inch wide. When we received an order, we wrote the order up on a regular order form, handed it to this teletype operator, who would send it to Chicago. Chicago would take it off, check it for errors, and check it for which exchange it was to go to. Then they would give it to another operator who would send it to the exchange it was supposed to be traded on. This would go to New York, and in New York they had separate operators there. The operator then took the order off, checked it, rewrote it on another slip. Then they would drop this slip into a transmitting unit that would carry it along like these little racehorse machines that you play where you spin the button and then move the horse on down a line. There would be a clerk at the end that would pick these up as he had a chance to do so. He would read the order to see that he understood it, pick up the phone, call the trading floor of the New York or the American Stock Exchange, transmit the order to the clerk on the floor, who then would go to the trading post where the stock is traded. After the trade was completed, it would be handed back to the clerk, and it might not be at the same time, might not even be the same clerk. He would then return to the phone, call upstairs to the clerk who had called it down in the first place, and the same procedure would be reversed back to our office. Now, the order would take anywhere from, I suppose the minimum would be 10 minutes to a maximum of hours before we got the answer back. Now we have a new computerized teletype machine. The salesman will write the order and hand it to the clerk. She types the order, which is immediately punched in tape. She reads the punched tape to see that it's correct, inserts it into a transmitter into the machine. Now, this transmitter will segregate the American, the New York, the Midwest, the Chicago Board of Trade, or whatever it happens to be, and this is an instantaneous thing. No one looks at it. The machine, by the code that is incorporated in the tape, will segregate it itself. The trade then goes immediately to the trading floor where that stock is traded. A clerk then does pick it up, take it to the trading post, comes back and inserts it in the machine, the answer, and it is transmitted back the same way. Now, the time involvement here, the least that we've been able to complete a trade in is about 58 seconds from the time that the order was actually typed in the first place until it was received back.
Still, such a rapid treatment of buy and sell orders in the stock exchanges of the country may create room for error. Mr. Morris comments on the possibility of slip-ups as volume grows.
In addition to speeding up the operation, we have created such a tight format for it that it has eliminated a lot of the error problems. In the first place, the tape can't be sent, you know, until it is scanned again, where before, the tape as it printed, we received our hard copy, as we call it, but the transmission was instantaneous, too. You couldn't print it and hold it in your hand and look at it. You had it, as soon as it was printed, it was off and running. So that now we catch a lot of orders, or the girl does, teletype operator, we'll catch a lot of these before they actually go out. And in order to cope with this speed, they have created what I would call a rather tight format to eliminate the possibility of error. But it is real frustrating to find out that you put a buy order in instead of a sell order for a particular stock, and you can see the tail end of it going through the transmitter, and suddenly it dawns on you made a mistake. You tell the girl, stop the tape, and she says, I can't, it's gone, it's on the New York trading floor already.
Not just the present status of stock and the prices asked are reported by such a system. Computers are also being utilized to analyze the trends in the market and prepare reasonable predictions of future market activity.
Insurance companies also rely on computers for rapid processing of all kinds of policies. Fire, auto, and life insurance policies grow in number each day, and companies are hard-pressed to handle all these policies with efficiency. The Equitable Life Assurance Society in New York has installed a special system to locate policies while they are being processed. Worried customers who have arranged for insurance protection but have not yet received a final copy of their policy may call a special answer-back system. As Equitable Life Assurance handles incoming applications, it attaches a booklet of 15 pre-punched control stub cards. As the application moves through the processing area, appropriate stubs are torn off and fed into the computer. Thus, a customer's question about his policy can be answered quickly. The application can be located, and if a policy number has been assigned, it can be given by phone to the caller. Typical queries may be handled in less than 2 minutes.
Do Not Fold has become the byword of financial institutions across the country. Accounting and the world of dollars and cents has been assigned to today's computer. On the next program in this series, we'll meet a new cake baker, a computer. We'll also see automobiles sketched by computers and plastics compounded through electronic data processing. Each week, the University of Illinois Radio Service brings you a new meaning behind the slogan of the computer age. Do not fold, bend, staple, or mutilate this card. This program was distributed by the National Educational Radio Network.